All right, welcome back everyone to Into the Great Wide Opens on the Straightcast platform. I'm Jamie Bruce, along with Brad Leitner as always. How's she going, boss?
Oh, she's going good. Summertime in the Midwest. Fish are biting. Weather's nice. Mosquitoes are horrible. And road construction.
All right. You heard it here first. It's going good in the Midwest. We got a quality show lined up tonight. If you've listened to the show for any length of time, we hit her out of the gate with a couple of heavy hitters. And now we're kind of, Brad and I are entrenched in the open scene fully. We're seeing all the goings on and meeting everyone and trying to get the layout a little bit. And along the way, you run into a bunch of beauties. And as you know, on the show, we don't just interview people based on performance. We do have the top performer in the opens, John Garrett, right now. Good guy, going to have a lot of good insight, and obviously an absolute hammer of an angler. And then we've got Chancey Walters on too. Another guy I met on the road, and Brad knew him before, and he's got lots of good stories, and he's a unique personality. So we just finish up that You Follow Open last week. We're going to dive into it with the boys. So grab a cool one, sit back, and we'll hop into the show here.
There's a moment when you're faced with a challenge, and just solving the problem isn't good enough. Even if that means breaking the rules and shredding apart conventional ways of thinking, all in the name of creating something truly remarkable. With this much control at its command, we didn't stop with just one. We created two incredible trolling motors. Introducing the new PowerPole Move Brushless Trolling Motor. This is the mountain, and this is Mountain Whiskey. Unspoiled, untamed, forever wild. There's no safety net, no way down. Up here, it's just man and the mountain and his tin cup. Tin cup whiskey, mountain whiskey.
Want to know the difference between power bait and other soft plastics? Ask the fish. Berkeley scientists have thousands of flavors tested on thousands of fish. Natural, man-made, every bait that's ever hit the water. No matter the shape, size, or color, PowerBait is the only one that has scientifically proven fish bite and will not let go.
All right, we got them all lined up. We got an interesting dynamic tonight. We got Chancey Walters here coming at us from, what are you on, bud? Is that just a jacked up pontoon boat?
You wouldn't believe it. I got literally on a secret trip. My wife, on June 3rd, just got married, and she wanted to do a surprise adventure honeymoon. And I thought we were going to Washington to hang out with her friends, and here we are. I rolled right into a plane to head to Alaska, and here I am on my buddy's boat called the Arctic Fox, having a whiskey, and was not expecting this. So I had to make sure that we could even get service here, so we got it.
Hell yeah.
I'll give you a boat tour in a minute.
Do you got a buddy with a boat in every state, or how does that work? Because you just got a 120 mile an hour speedboat ride after You Follow with one of your oil rigging buddies, who's an absolute legend.
That's the fastest I've ever been in a boat.
Buck 21. Yeah, that's double crazy. The lund. That's a full two lunds.
That's six. That's six guys in one boat. Like I said, did you see it, Johnny?
No, I didn't.
Oh my god, you have to pull it up later. Literally. On the way to pick us up, he was going 128, 129, close to 130. And then with six guys, and that was just him, with six guys, we were going 119 to 120, somewhere in there. That's pretty crazy. We went, it was fun.
Yeah, that was unreal. So we got Chancey. He's a personality pickup from the road. As soon as I was around him for about 4 minutes, we're like, okay, we got to line you up. Eats fish. He's sampled the fish from every lake we've ever been to. He's like a damn thermometer. He's ready to pop any minute. And then we got John Garrett. John, I bumped into you a few times, around weigh-ins and everything. You're obviously shit kicking the points. Everyone's got eyes on you. unbelievable performance so far this year. So thanks for jumping on, bud.
Perfect. Yeah, absolutely. If I catch as many fish the rest of year as Chancey's ate this year, I think I'll be in good shape at the end of the season for sure.
I think I got the bad juju. Seriously, I need to stop maybe eating. But I thought I was eating, you know, the fish that the bass were competing with trying to eat the bait. So I thought I was doing a good thing. But I think no more fish at the deal that comes from the
maybe
lake.
Maybe you got to start eating bass, Chancey. Maybe that's
the same. I have. If my gut hook one, I eat one. I mean, I'm not letting them go to waste. They're amazing.
Yeah, I like that attitude. Chancey's like a damn bald eagle sitting around the bay on a hot day waiting for them floaters, them quarter-pound penalties. He licks them up. But
I cooked drum for the whole camp 2 tournaments ago, and they didn't even know it was drum until after they ate it. Like, man, this is the best damn fish I've ever ate. It was all drum.
Well, before we get into it, we got to hear your spread here, bud. Like, where every lake we've been to, you had to have eaten a fish out of it. Are we talking mostly crappies? I know you've got a little exotic on a couple. Let's hear it.
Yeah. I mean, all that fish is good. It's just all about how you clean it and how you cook it. You know, I mean, I love it all. I mean, I love cooking fish. I mean, I brought some halibut from Alaska. That was pretty good, wasn't it, boys? We had it at Oklahoma.
Yeah, that played
well. That was a pretty good little, I didn't bring enough. You know, I should have brought some more, but it was good. Everybody got to sample it. Wish you were there, Johnny. You would have loved it.
You're in halibut country right now. You need to snack some up.
Yeah.
Yeah, you better be humping some of that to the St. Lawrence, bud.
Yeah, I'm going to have to now because we're out of freezer room after this little trip. We're going to be bringing back a bunch of fish, so I got to clear out the old stuff, and we'll get to eat it on the road for sure because we got to stock some. We got to probably get another freezer after this damn trip.
Hell yeah, bud. Hump it down. John, what's your life on the road like? You got a crew you steadily roll with, or like,
yeah, I got
your camper guy, or what are we talking
about? I got a crew. We got actually my granddad fishes as a co-angler, so we travel together every tournament. He's with me from the time that we both live here in Union City, so when we leave Union City, we're both together pretty much an entire time till we get back. And I travel with Logan Parks and Jake Maddox and Josh Bragg. So we got a little 5-pack we run around with.
Yeah. All hammers too. That doesn't hurt.
Yeah. Sometimes Kenta or Chancey come plug in wherever we're staying from time to time. Yeah, we got a good group of guys we hang around with.
Yeah. Kenta seems like he'd be a good guy to have like around the boats when you're rigging. Every time I see him, he's chain smoking. So I feel like there'd be no bugs around him ever.
Yeah. he's got them burned off for sure. man, Kenta's so open. I like having Kenta around. He's super cool on what baits he uses. He's super transparent. When I'm around him, I'm like, yo, Kenta, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? And he just straight up tells you. And he's so in depth and precise on his, you know, on his lures, honestly, his, you know, setup. I like learning stuff from him for sure.
Yeah, absolute Iron Man too. He's the only guy, the only Bassmaster Elite Series pro that's doing all 9 opens, which is already insane. And then if I recall correctly, on Sunday night of the Bassmaster Classic, he was the last guy in the bar.
Yeah. The times that I've hung out with him, he has so many dang baits that, I mean, I feel like they're so ahead of the game over there in Japan and the stuff that they know. It's unbelievable, the little tricks and things that you know, they're just literally ahead of the game. It's just crazy on another level. And I feel like Kent is probably top 5 in the world.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
you guys probably agree with that.
I would definitely agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there's many people that would argue that, bud. But we'll do a little Oklahoma wrap up here. I don't know. That definitely wasn't my favorite lake in the world. It was, as you guys know, it was tougher than nails. I don't know if that's just the normal Oklahoma summertime or just the south in the summer or what the deal was, but she's a grind. I mean, it was a cool venue and the people around were awesome, but what are the thoughts after that one, boys?
Chancey, you want to roll first?
I mean, go ahead, Johnny.
I think that Eufaula was, I think it's a really good lake. I think we nailed it at one of the most awkward times. And, you know, I see that where I live, it's going on right now, is when all the shad fry and catfish fry start to almost mature at the same time. So we had, you know, shad spawn and a catfish spawn happen, you know, heavy a week to 3 weeks ahead of that tournament. And those, that fry isn't hanging around where they actually spawned at, all of them. And we've seen some shad fry around boat docks, but that small bait catfish fry was starting to move offshore where most all those fish were. That's why you've seen huge clouds of bait around everywhere you go. And if you've seen a stick or stump, there was a catfish guarding a huge wad of fry. Made so much bait for the bass to eat. I mean, all kinds of just super tiny stuff for fish to eat. So the bait forage was kind of at an all-time high through the year at the lake we just went at. So I think that's why we hit it at a strange time. I think the bass population there is good. I think we just hit it at a weird time. I really do. I've seen, you know, so many. I think everybody's seen it through practice where you would fish all day long, but you hit an hour stretch of the day where you got a bunch of hope. You're like, oh, did I go through a good area? Did I go through there at a good time? And I think what would happen is we would go through an area in practice where, you know, maybe all that bait, all that fry wasn't present. We'd go through a good area and we were able to pick up a few bites. Yeah, I think overall good lake. We just hit it at a weird, very weird time.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear that. I think the locals done us dirty there a little bit too. Cause in all all the pre-tournament dock talk, they're all just like, dude, this lake is going to fish so big. So I think everyone burned like a day or two of practice, like, or the whole practice just going to all these dumbass sloughs out in the middle of nowhere, like, you know, driving through double coffee and catching nothing. Well, everyone that said that, I saw them all in practice. I saw them all in the, a bunch of them in the tournament. They were just in the two Clearwater creeks and just around the community main lake stuff. We got duped.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. No doubt.
We definitely got duped at that deal. I heard the same type of deal. Oh, these fish never get any deeper than 6 foot and all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, well, they might be right. I mean, obviously you got to listen to the guys that are there. And I just got, I fished out there. I was wanting to try to find some offshore deal. I thought that, you know, it was the time of year that you're going to start seeing them starting to slide out and starting to group up. And I found some groups of fish, but I think they were drum and catfish and stuff like that. And I just didn't get on that deal. And I caught a couple dinks out in the brush pile. So it never gave me, and I was always telling everybody, when you build a pattern, you build it off the first good bite you get. And a lot of people don't get that first good bite in a brush pile or on a break or on a point. So then, you know, they're like, oh, it ain't going on. And then when they get their good bite, whatever they do, they build the pattern off that. So a lot of guys, they got a good bite when they fished a brush pile that they found. Oh shit, they're on the brush pile. So then they keyed on that and ran that pattern. I never had that. I was shore banging with a biffle head the whole time.
Yeah, because that was your first good bite probably. Then you kind of lock into that tunnel vision.
Exactly, man. I didn't, you got to build confidence off of something. You can't do something out there in no man's land and try to make something happen if you don't get the bites. You know what I'm saying? You got to do something confident that you got the bite. I didn't get the bites out doing that. So, I mean, I don't know. Did you get, what was the deepest fish you caught, Johnny?
I had the one good place I had was they were in 17 foot. It was in that Longtown Creek. And it was kind of the only spot I found like that where there was a group of fish. And it was thermocline was in 17 and a half, 18. And that break just barely poked above the thermocline. But that was it. I mean, I looked deep from the first day I got there. I mean, that's what I like to do. I looked offshore the entire time. And I kind of found that place like the third day of practice maybe. So, I mean, I spent 3 days looking for it and I spent 2.5 days after looking for that. And as far as a group of fish, that was it. And man, I marked every brush pile I seen or big stump above the thermocline. And man, there was not a bunch of it. I'll say that. I don't know if that lake, I don't know if the water stays so dirty in that lake that they don't have to fish brush. I just didn't find much of it.
Like all the brush piles were on the most obvious points. But I do think that it like cleared up a little bit. So it, you know, the locals are kind of like, oh, we don't really see this that often, you know, that far off the bank. So that's why you couldn't go down like flat bank and, you know, find brush piles. that I really noticed that, like, you could definitely see the guys that got info, because on the first day of practice, I saw guys just hopping to like sneak piles. And so I was like, okay, there's brush piles everywhere. And then I was like, no, those are dots.
yeah, for sure. When you see people on the first day driving straight to a waypoint, putting the troll motor down and going to the next, you're like, all right, he didn't spend all week scanning those up when he's got them on the first day already.
Yeah, don't be fooled.
Yeah, it's legal to have someone putting out brush during the off limits, you know, the 30-day off limits we have. Yeah. Even if they're not fishing a tournament, they can put brush out and you can get those dots. So, you know, for sure. You see someone fish them on the first day, they got them.
Yeah. Yeah. That was pretty funny, but like it kind of fished like a different lake by the sounds of it. I mean, and man, something else crazy that happened here, and Brad and I were talking about it. There were a couple guys that got on them out deep. You know, you just hear it through the dock talk, and we actually went for lunch a couple of times. The Northern boys aren't really cut out for that heat. So there's a little tiki bar there. We'd go sling a dozen wings. And, you know, you hear some dock talk, and like, there were a couple of guys that didn't even fish the last like day and a half. They're just like, we're on them, parked around the trailer. And you believe that?
No,
I couldn't believe it. I was at it. I was like, oh my God, I'm screwed, because I'm getting like five to seven bites a day, and that's lucky. That's a lot of bites for me, I guess, what I was doing. So I was like, holy shit, I am completely out of the game on this one.
It
was the same for me. Like I said, I'd fish all day, and then it'd be 1 hour through the day where boom, 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 I get three bites. And that was how my practice went all week. I'd grind all day, have a little short window where I got a few bites. I by no means thought that I could not practice the last, you know, on them so good I didn't have to practice the last day for sure. But I heard that too, man. A lot of times those tough tournaments, you hear everybody complaining, moaning, griping about how bad the fishing was. And for some reason at that tournament, I heard a lot of people like, dude, I'm having a good practice. I'm catching them. I'm doing this. I'm feeling pretty good about it. It's like, dang.
Yeah,
it's not the tournament I thought that I was going to hear that from.
No, dude, I was the opposite. I bet Brad on the last day of practice, I was like, he's like, I bet you $100 you'll catch 14 to 60 or over 14 pounds. I was like, I'm not going to hear. Like, it's not laying out. I'd been, you know, fishing above the thermocline 18 to 6 foot, finding every little sneaky stump and everything, and just picking everything apart. You saw how many boats were in those clear water zones. And then when I heard about these guys that were just taking her easy before the tournament, I was like, okay, if they found something that good, then I'm missing the boat, because I ain't seeing it. I've been around, and it forced me like way out, you know, way out and off the wall a little bit. And I found a wad of them in 22 feet at like at 11 o'clock on the last day of practice, like while they had just tied their last line on. So I mean, dock talk can help too, I guess, in some ways, like in that way. That was kind of an adverse effect, but no, that's cool. All right, boy. Well, I mean, that one's in the rear view. John, you had an absolute horrendous tournament there. Hit your rock bottom, which is a 30th place finish.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Now, I'll be honest with you. Man, I was really disappointed in that. I'm not disappointed that finish whatsoever. Like, if I would have put together, I don't know what I had. If I'd have put together 2 12.5 pound bags or 2 13 pound bags and had that same weight that I did, dude, I would have been jacked. But like, I had 18-10 and only weighed in 2 fish the next day. Like, that really bums me out. I know it wasn't easy to catch a keeper by any means, but like, that was the first day all year where I haven't listened to a small bug I have in my head. Like, all day I was trying to push that deep spot to work because I knew it lived there the day before. But man, like, all day I was pushing off thoughts in the back of my head, when all year, if I had a thought pop in my head, I'd strap my rods in and go do it. So I'm, you know, a little disappointed in that second day for sure, but no, that's part of it.
Yeah.
Still, you know, the crazy part is on my practice, I was just catching like little rats, 13. Now, if I caught a 14 incher, it was hard to catch a 14 incher for me for the first three days of practice. And then I think it was the second to last day I went on that community stretch. Obviously I was like, oh, I literally pulled up there on a spot that started looking good, where it was kind of like rock and sand mixed. And I was throwing that biffle head and I caught one close to 4 pounds. I'm like, oh my God. Okay. That's awesome. Hopefully that's not a lucky bite. I skipped a bunch of bank. I went down the bank like 100 yards and I made it. I caught another one like the third cast. I'm like, oh my God, they're loaded on here. They gotta be, you know, the release fish that probably, you know, slowly just filter up that big bank on the right when we come out, you know? I didn't know, obviously everybody and their dog, I think, pulled up there and caught a good bass in practice or something, because it was like a damn, like we were doing a parade up that damn thing. You had to find the first morning, literally pulled in there and there was no openings in there. I found one gap that was maybe 150 yards wide that I could slide in. And I slid in there and I started fishing. Like I had to slide in front of somebody, but I gave him, you know, 100 yards and got behind that, the other guy that was ahead of me, and it was Jason Christie. And I'm like, oh my God. So anyway, that was pretty cool. You know, obviously he's the beast, one of the beasts of all beasts, you know, in the tournament world. But I'm sitting there fishing and I catch one like the second cast, a 3 pounder, flip it in the boat. And a few casts, I catch another one. And I meet up with Kenta Kamara and he's right around the bank. And I'm talking to him. I was like, what do you got? And he's like, I got a 4 pounder and a 3 pounder. And I was like, I got a couple threes and I felt damn good. Like these are beautiful fish. Like I caught 2 good bass in practice and I literally had those in the live well, talked to him for a little bit. I turned back. He was fishing in that 9 to 15 foot zone. You know, he had some weird rig he had going on from something from depths or something. I don't know. Some little jungle deal. It was like a minnow on a head and he was shaking that thing off the bottom. It was pretty cool. And he was catching them. I was watching. And I literally came back and I threw that biffle head. There was a little sand patch. And Christy ended up getting his troll motor lifted up. So then I had like a 300-yard gap of bank that I could fish. I turned back, and as soon as I went around the corner, I flew through that biffle head. And I haven't caught a smallmouth all practice. I don't know. Did you guys catch very many smallmouth?
I didn't catch any.
Yeah, we talked about it. Like, I never even caught one. And I literally loaded up, and this thing come out of the damn water like a rocket and threw my biffle head. And, you know, you guys have used biffle head. I haven't lost many fish on because that head's, you know, separate from it. So they're not fighting the weight. It come up and threw it. And I ended up losing 2 big ones, 2 big smallmouth. And I never even, and I was telling Jamie and Brad, we were sitting at camp. And that one morning I got out of me and Brad, we were getting out on the lake a little bit later than everybody else. About 9 o'clock, we were strutting out there and we looked out there. I looked out there and there was a boat and they were holding a big old smallmouth, but I seen something jump before that. And this damn smallmouth come out of the air. And I was like, man, what is that? I grabbed my binoculars out of the boat or out of my truck. And I looked and they were taking pictures of a giant smallmouth, looked like a 5 to 6 pounder. So I was like, oh my God, that's the first smallmouth I seen. They are in here, you know? But yeah, I had a horrible deal. I was losing them left and right. I don't know. It was one of those weird deals. They weren't getting it good or something. I mean, I have the right setup for it. They were just coming off, but I should have had a good day. I only had 3 bass or, you know, largemouth bites the second day. And only got one of them in. I was just losing. My co-angler, I told him about the day one. He's like, no way. You lost that many? And I said, yeah. I said, it was pretty pathetic. And then I lost two with him there that the second day. And they were big ones, you know. So that's how it went for me. That's how this whole year's went for me. But, hey, I'm getting to do what I love to do. And, you know, we're very blessed. All of us on here are very blessed to be able to get to do this, because there's a lot of people that would love to be in our shoes, even though I'm like, I think John's in first and I'm in last in the points. So even last
we're covering the spread here. You're not in last either, by the way. I went into the stats a little bit today. There's plenty of people behind you. Yeah. One thing I should say before we move on from you, Paul, is I had a co-angler on the second day. Kid's name is Sean O'Brien. I think he's from Bethel. And man, best co-angler I've had all year. You know, fishing was tough there, didn't have much to throw at. And, you know, I caught 6 of my bass off the same spot and he had every single opportunity to cast up there and catch one. And it wouldn't even have been in the gray. Like it would have been totally acceptable. And he just held his fire and just threw the other direction. So got to give him a shout out. Absolute beauty. And that I kind of got that general vibe from every person we met in Oklahoma. Like I was honestly looking at
good people there.
I was looking at a damn double wide on a couple of acres when I was pulling out of there on my phone. Like, I was, you know, that was a sweet place. So shout out to Oklahoma.
Then Shane, the local game warden, hooked us up with that awesome fish fry. That was pretty mint.
That was awesome.
Yeah. Nice up a bunch of crappies and catfish. I took a big, like a handful of catfish, threw it on my plate, took one bite. And I'm used to eating fresh walleye on a fire like a couple times a week up here. And I ate that catfish and just like kind of like, you know, spit it out.
Like, I had to eat the rest of it for you. You're like, I ain't eating this chance. And you gave me the rest of your catfish.
Yeah, I just funneled it to the mercury carburetor beside me and he took care of it. I did see those two catfish. I showed you boys a video though. I was going down the bank and there was like two 30-inch catfish and one had the other's entire head. And
it's like, yeah.
You see, grab that video off your phone and show it. You got that video of it?
Yeah, I'll send it to
you. That was pretty cool.
Why is that? John, like, you must have seen it before, right?
You know, I ain't seen it much. I haven't seen it. I don't know if I've ever seen it.
Not a catfish. I've seen where, you know, bass had a bluegill in it or a crappie and they pulled the crappie out.
I've seen northerns or muskies like that before, but never a catfish.
Yeah, this is just two of the same freaking size. And then, and like, that lake was wild. They had, when I was sitting out in the storm on the first day, I was sitting under a marina in the lightning and my phone cord lit on fire in my boat. Like, lit up.
Wow.
Didn't blow the fuse, nothing. And then later that day, I found a damn Loch Ness monster on my side imaging. I can't explain it. I'll have to show you the picture. And I don't know. You're pretty tight on your side imaging, obviously. Maybe you'll be able to figure this out. I'll let you boys talk for a second while I find this.
Hey, how many flatheads did you guys catch? I mean, I caught quite a few of those little, they were 3 to 4 pounders. I caught one that was maybe 20. But man, them things, they thump it, don't they? Those things, that was fun catching them flatheads.
I feel like every time I fish a riprap bank, I caught one. Like almost every single time.
Yeah, I watched Milken's video. He was leaning on those damn things. He was catching a bunch of those catfish. Yeah.
Well, that's
what's so surprising down south. Like up in the north, the catfish are like tight on the bottom.
Yeah, that's Loch Ness for sure, dude.
Yeah,
that's Loch
Ness. Dude, that's Nessie.
Yeah.
I mean, that's net. I'm telling you right now, it's about as Nessie as it gets right there.
Yeah, man, there's a couple drum lurking above it.
Holy
but
shit.
Like,
yeah.
What else would that be? Like,
it ain't a big shaky worm floating around there. I know that.
No, it's like 30 feet long.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I wonder if it wasn't like an anaconda out there. Somebody used to have a pet and that somebody's just strutting around out there.
Wonder if you ran something over real close to your transducer on your side imaging it, made it look huge, but it was right underneath your transducer.
That's not how side imaging works.
That's Brad. It's 100% Nessie, and you know it.
That's nasty, bud. It kind of looked like a
horizontal. I don't think the water's clear enough for Nessie. Yeah, it's pretty dirty down there.
So anyway, we got her. We found her. Got a bead on her. She's in Oklahoma. Yeah. It probably eats jet skiers and pina coladas and whatever the hell else it can get its hands on.
Yeah, there's plenty of jet skiers the first day we were there. My gosh, that first Saturday, those party boats were unreal.
Oh, dude. Well, you mentioned Longtown. I had to get out of there. Like, it was Saturday afternoon. I've never seen so many people having so much fun. And, like,
they had a
I didn't get out of there because of the boat traffic. I got out of there because I was like, I've caught 2 bass all day. It's as hot as I've ever stood in. I'm dying. And every single person within 200 yards of me having the time of their life. I was like, I gotta go.
they had the poker run going on that day. So yeah, it was like a 5-card deal. They hit 5 marinas. I heard it through my buddy that lived there and that took us out in the boat. And he said that it had a big poker run. I think it was like 15 to 20 grand you win. So and it was like a $200 buy-in. So they had their own bass tournament going on. It was a party tournament is what it was.
Hey, Chansey, we should have did that. We had a lot better chance of winning money doing that than bass fishing.
Yeah, I don't know. I got to figure something out, bud. I don't know.
Brad wants some money.
I ain't doing this to make money, boys. I'm just telling you right now. There ain't. I mean, you can make a little bit, but I'm just. I don't know.
Well, I guess John's won more than anyone this year, and he can tell you you're still not making any money.
Dude. You ain't making anything. I promise. Like, there's a few. I mean, of course, I haven't won a tournament or top three to any, but to say how bad it is, leading the points, I ain't made anything. There's zero money in it. I got on this topic the other night with on Bateman's podcast. Like, I was watching like 5 days ago one of the old St. Lawrence videos where Polinick won, and he was like, man, he said, I'm fishing this tournament to win. You win the Classic, you win $500,000. And it just hit me. I'm like, dude, just 10 years ago, payouts were better. Entry fees were the same. Now the fishing industry is literally as big as it's ever been, and the payouts are worse than they've ever been.
Somebody's partying. Somebody's got a yacht somewhere.
There's never been more people. Never been more people in bass boats. There's never been more people fishing these tournaments or buying rod and reels and baits. But somehow the payouts are at the all-time low.
Yeah.
Entry fees all-time high.
And dude, there's never been more patch pirates either. So a lot of these companies are like, I don't got to give 10 people $5,000 to $15,000. I'll just get 4,000 people and give them 30%, and they can sell it to their aunt, their uncle, and their third cousin, and call her good. So, I mean, that doesn't impact the payouts, but on the sponsor front, that obviously hits hard.
I'm not saying anybody suckers, because we're all chasing a crazy dream and we all get to do it, but we're part of the problem. We're 180 of us chipped in, like dogs, just right as soon as they opened the opens entry fees, 180 of us ran straight to the computer and put in the minute it opened. So can't blame Bass for anything, because we're buying right into what they're selling, for sure.
Yeah. No, I'll buy that. I'd do it again too. They didn't even have the payout released, and it was just like, yep, yard sale it. Here you go, $27,000.
Do you think they'll have that many people next year though? I'm seeing a decline next year, but
dude, you got more kids coming. I mean, it's there ain't no jetting. I think it's gonna be. It might be more, Brad. We all thought the opposite. I thought it was gonna be 100 max. Didn't you guys?
I was surprised that there was 178 of us, because when I seen it, I thought there would be 225. I truly did, because you had the invitationals cut pay. You had people drop out of the NPFL, and, people that were supposed to be requalifying for the Elite Series. I legit thought 225 was they were going to have it no problem. And having 178 is still a ton, but I thought theirs would be 225. I
kind of wish there was 225 in it, so there wouldn't be so many jackpotters. Like, it'd be better if there was 225, because then you wouldn't have all the locals in it.
Yeah, those people jumping in, they leave some point gaps. That's what I'm that's where it gets me. That's what gets me the most. If they have an open spot, I'm good with them jumping in, but them coming in third and getting 197 points when the person, finishing third in the EQs, gets a 1 point less because you're there if they come in fourth or something. But they shouldn't earn points if they're not fishing the whole deal, I don't feel like.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that can go for you or against you somewhere.
Yeah, it can. It definitely can go for or against you. You're right on that.
Yeah. I mean, we've been going to play the first three tournaments we went to, locals won.
Yeah.
And there's been plenty in the top 20 and plenty in the top 30, and there's a big gap. Happy to see EQ guys win the last, win a couple of them. Yeah. I shouldn't say the first three, because Milliken wasn't a local, he's an EQ from Texas.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit inaccurate, but somewhere like the St. Lawrence River, as the drops start coming, like, I couldn't believe the drops at this tournament, like people just eating their deposits like that. But as they come, I mean, the locals are usually pretty solid, especially up there on a huge system like that. Mm-hmm. So as they come, like, you know, you could have 20 locals in between you. If you're in the top three or the top five or something in the tournament, there could be major separation between 20th place or 22nd place. Like, they've got good locals on both sides of the border up there. So,
yeah,
oh man, for sure. It's dangerous.
And then, I mean, think about when we go to Harris Chain, it's going to be the most important tournament for points. There's going to be the fewest EQ people, and there could potentially be the absolute most local people get in that tournament just because the EQ field is dropping off and off and off. Yeah, so,
I'd think of the same thing on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But as a local, like, I feel like the Harris Chain isn't going to be as locally dominated as somewhere like the St. Lawrence.
Just you know, I mean, like, I would agree with that. Yeah.
Like, I went to Hartwell last year, which is, I think it was the second last of nine. I think it was the eighth tournament. And I was like, oh my God, this thing's just full of locals. Like, I'm going to get demolished. I've never even seen a spotted bass before. And by the time you get there and these guys pre-fishing for 20 days and, you know, they get all beat up and they just move off all the brush piles and either go out into the abyss or go out on little isolated things. The locals kind of lost their edge there. I mean, they still, like, Derek Lettinen did good. There's still plenty of locals catching them, but somewhere like the St. Lawrence, that's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Like, they are going to consider, you know, a lot of the top 50 is going to be locals. Where the Harris Chain, it's going to be a ton of boats and everyone knows everything and it's going to be pushed up. So
I gotta tell you a story though. That this is crazy, but I mean, obviously, Jamie, you're setting amazing in the points, and Johnny, I mean, I hope this is the year, buddy. I mean, you so deserve to be there. I thought ever since I met you, I knew you were the real deal, and it's gonna happen. But I gotta tell a funny story. When John called me 2 years ago, you remember this, Johnny? Obviously, Johnny should already be fishing the elites if it wasn't for my ass. If we were fishing on Grand Lake. And I was setting pretty good the first day. I think, I don't know what it was, in the 20s. You were setting pretty good. And that was where Cody Huff qualified. And I had a decent bag, just a good bag. I was setting good. I love Grand Lake. It's not close to home, but it fishes like home. I go out the second day and I only come in four fish and I lost two. I had seven bites and got four keepers in the boat. I just needed to get one just squeaker in the boat. And I would have been ahead of Joseph Webster in that tournament and would have made John Garrett a point or two ahead of him, and he would have qualified for the elites if I would have just brought one more keeper in. It's crazy. That's exactly what happened, huh, Johnny?
Yeah.
I can't believe he still talks to you.
It's gonna, listen, it's all going to work out in the end. Okay, so just relax and just keep doing
what you're doing,
buddy. Yeah, no, and Mercer was on the Get the Net podcast the other night, and you know, we kind of took a deep dive into this, and I felt like I got duped last year out of the Southern Division, just not getting into the first one. But and you know, he made a good point. He's just like, it's just gonna land how it lands. You know, John might not be the weapon he is now had he got into the elites then. Like, dude, you've cashed checks the last 10 opens in a row. Like, bomb free for 10 opens. I combed your stats. It's like, you know, top 20s all over the place, checks all over the place, and then just a couple little isolated bombs.
He's a duck hunting machine, dude. He does it all. Renaissance man from the southern jungle.
Yeah. I mean, the bombs are isolated. They happen, but they're spread out. And now, you know, you put her on a graph, and it's just like, those are going away. Those bombs are turning to 30s and 40s. So, I mean, you could just be that much more of a weapon. Obviously, you're young. How old are you?
27.
Yeah. That's a young God. What do you call that, Chancey? A herd calf?
He's got a kid. Actually, I'm a satellite bull. I'm not a herd bull. Everybody call me herd bull. I don't have no kids. Okay. So I'm a satellite bull. Johnny's got a young one.
I got one creeping up on us. Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. You're a satellite. You're a herd bull. Yeah. I'm a satellite bull.
Okay. He's a herd bull. We got that established. But anyway, you know better than anyone that a lot of the game is mental, and you've kind of, I'm sure you've gone through some adversity the last few years doing it, and and you're just going to be more set up for when you make it. And I mean, I don't think anyone's betting against you this year. It's looking
they don't
pretty
want you there, I'm just telling you right now.
I hope it's my year. And we'll pull back to the 2020, I believe, when Chansey was talking about 2021, maybe.
Yeah.
It was the first year or the second year they did the overall AOI qualifiers. And there was so much gray area on how they're going to take the qualifications. And they were not set in stone. That wasn't talked about. None of us knew what was going on. So that last tournament of the last division there at Grand Lake, no one knew how the qualifications were going to go and ended up missing it by a point at Grand. So I come in fourth. And they took top three, and in the overall AOI came in fifth that year. And if they would have qualified the Easterns and Southerns and Centrals and then took overall AOI, they would have took down like seventh place and I would have made it. But that year they took the overall AOI first. So they took the top three overall and then Central
and went to the divisions,
Southerns. And then in the Easterns, they went down to like seventh in the Easterns or Southerns or whatever it was. Yeah.
Yeah. Sam George missed the boat on that too.
Yep. He was fourth overall and I was fifth overall. Yeah. We both would have made it if they had done it a different way. But, you know, every year I've kind of got a taste of it and I just, at the end of last season, I was like, you know, will it happen? Will it ever happen? Like, how long do you chase this crazy dream? You know, will it come to fruition? And, you know, hopefully it's the year. I mean, I'm tired of chasing something that, like we said, is not lucrative at all. If anything, you're in a hole at the end of the year, for sure in a hole at the end of the year, no matter how well you do.
Yeah. Yeah, man. But I would say this is the hard way to make her. You know, it's never been easy.
No.
But at least when you already know it, but when you make it now, it's like check mark beside it, you know?
Dude, the stats this year, unbelievable.
Still can't wrap my head around it. Like people are throwing out, you know, myself included, that a 50th place average would get there.
Yeah,
and it's not looking like that. It's, you know, it's estimated around 40 right now, just looking at the chart. Like, it's scary.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure y'all's group, Chance's group, my group, yeah, every tournament we're like, dude, like, these points aren't going to keep up like this. And then after day one weigh-in, you get to the house, you rig your stuff up, you look at the leaderboard, you're like, oh, dang, everybody in the top 20 caught them again. You know, the top 20 consists of the top 20 in the points. It's just unbelievable the way everybody's catching them this year.
Yeah, and we keep saying, oh, we'll go to Bugs Island, that'll switch it up. We'll go to Bufalo where there's, you know, no intel and it's a totally different lake, that'll switch it up. Oh, okay, we'll go to St. Lawrence and try that on the smallmouth. It's going to be still pretty stable. And the reality is right now, you know, just on some napkin math, like if you're not in the top 40, you're almost mathematically out. And like, it's dangerous, man. It's tight. It's going to be like probably a 38th place average to finish it out. It seems like.
It's ridiculous. It really is crazy.
We all talk about it. It's 100% the toughest tournaments, series to do well in. Guaranteed. I don't care what anybody says. You'll ask anybody that nobody wants to go to. Like, I traveled with Jacob Prosnick. He's one of the best anglers in the world. He's amazing. And he's like, dude, I can't. This place, this is just absolutely ridiculous. It's just unbelievable. I mean, these guys do not want to fish it. It's hard. It's the hardest. I mean, do the math. I mean, you got the best local guys. You got the best. You got elites in there that've been doing it forever. You got the best college kids. You know, you got your best, like a lot of your really, you know, like I grew up fishing, you know, since I was like 16, bought my first bass boat and I built where I got my ass kicked when I was a young kid. And then I learned how to win, try to win. And I was always in the top three at all my local tournaments. And that's what gave me the confidence to move forward. If you ain't winning at home on your local bodies of water, you have no chance coming here and competing at the Opens. I'm just telling you right now. You have to, figure it out. Because, I mean, I feel like I'm pretty good, and I am getting my ass kicked, literally, mentally, and everything. I know what I'm doing, but it's just – it's another level here. I'm just telling you. You guys know this. I mean, Brad, you know what I'm saying.
It's been a trying year, I'll tell you that. You got to just keep fishing. It'll turn around, but it's it's hard to get momentum when it's all bad momentum, I've been on the top of everything in the Midwest, and, certain years it's super easy. I'm sure John's, it's been fairly easy for him. Everything he does is right, and in the Opens this year, everything I do is wrong. But I think it builds character and helps you down
the road. You learn it. We learn so much when you do so. I have learned more this year than I ever have in my life. And just little things you guys pick it up doing this. And I've never, ventured out of, pretty much Iowa and Missouri, and getting to fish all these bodies of water and how these fish relate to the cover and what they do. It's so much different. I'm used to my lakes, where they set up perfect how you want them. I can find them easy. I felt like I was one of the first people side scanning around home. Rick Fishback got me on the deal back a few years ago, right when the Helix has come out, where I could count the bass. And now everybody and their dog's doing it. It's all on YouTube now. These guys know what they look like. They know what to look for. And I used to know for a fact that I was the only one doing it around home, because there'd be 30, 40 boats go out, and they would go by the three biggest schools in the lake, and nobody would even stop on. I'd be the last boat, and I had it all to myself. So I just knew, that game's no longer gone. Now it's all, what's cool about it now, it's all mental. Now it's 100% mental, rotation, and you just got to be confident in what you're doing. There's no more, it's hard to find a sneaky hole. John, you found that little spot, but think how much time you could have easily have not even checked that spot.
Wouldn't
have been on that school of fish. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's crazy. Everything's got to just go perfectly right for it to work out. You got to fish so clean. I mean, it's unbelievable. You cannot lose a fish in this game. If you do, you got to make it up with two big ones. It's crazy.
Yeah. One of my concerns, and when they first announced the EQ and the nine, and it's okay, we're doing it to build an angler that can survive on the Elite Series. That was, that's what was promoted. But it seems like with these huge fields, the lakes haven't been tough, thank God, so far. It seems like you're building an angler that can catch fish on the most pressured water there is. And my concern is people coming from this, might, because you can 15 pound them to death in the Opens and survive and make the Elite Series. But when you get there, the practice is cut in half, the field's cut in half. You're going to need some whack fest, you're going to need to big show it to survive. You show up and catch 14 pounds a day everywhere you go, you're going to get your ass kicked. So I feel like there's going to be, and I'm not trying to throw a dark cloud over anything, but that's what I feel like more and more everywhere we go. I'm like, okay, I just got to go find, 20 sneaky stumps or something over here and throw a spinning rod and not, survive. But like I said, if you get there, that's it. You're back to power fishing a lot of it, and you're looking for the whack fest. You got any thoughts on that?
I completely agree with that. I mean, that's no doubt. And the schedules, they're so different. This year, somewhat I fished offshore in every single tournament, and you look at the Elite schedule, you about need a pair of sunglasses. You might be able to bedfish all year in the Elite schedule this year. I mean, it's completely different. You got, 100 guys. I mean, they're most of them are probably way better than the guys. They are way better than the guys fishing the Open.
For sure.
They're probably not setting the hook on every fish that bites like a lot of the Opens guys do. Yeah. And, this year I have not been saying, I'm about to go try to catch only 4 or 5 pound fish today. I roll up to wherever I'm fishing, and if I see a fish, I'm throwing a drop shot at it because it's, I don't care if it's a 14 incher or a 4 pounder, I want that thing to bite. You know, it's like, how do I catch a limit every single day this year and not having to worry about trying to catch 20, 25 pounds? It's completely different. I've just kind of done my approach so different this year, as in not trying to learn how to try to catch the biggest fish in a lake, but like, how can I find enough super small specific targets? That way I know I could catch 5 fish of any size, you know? And go ahead.
That's so crazy, Chance, because Brucey is the same deal. Like Brucey, I mean, I stay with Brucey, and I'm kind of like the swing for it all the time type person. You know, I like catching big ones, and you know, I go in an area, catch a fish. I may move down the lake a ways, look for another area like that. I don't sit there and pick apart an area. Where what you're talking about is exactly how Brucey breaks down a lake. You know, like, it's kind of like an MLF format, honestly, because you're just trying to get bit. And, it, you know, for us up north, it's like bites are a dime a dozen. You know, you're just looking for the bigger fish if you want to win. So it's been a mind game for me trying to figure out how to, I mean, catching 5 a day, as you said, is so crucial. Like, I'd be twice as high as I'm in the points today if I would have caught 5 each tournament. I always start out good, and then I don't catch my 5 the second day.
Yeah.
And don't relate to how – it's amazing how hard it gets the second day. Like, it is
– oh, yeah.
It is unbelievable. You think you could just go catch a bass somewhere, but you fish 8 hours, you're like, no, there's no bass in this lake.
Yeah, the 1,200 willing to bite bass are at the takeoff. 225 of us all scoop up the 5 dumbest bass on the lake the first day and drag them off. Yeah.
Catch retreads.
Yeah, shorter. I'd be happy 100% with shorter practices because – you can just get a bite, you know what I mean? Just think how many times where, you know, you do find an offshore spot or do find something. Didn't happen at the last derby, but you catch one or two just to see what size they are, and you roll out of there, and a lot of them are so obvious, like, man, you know, they're obvious, but maybe they won't get found, but they get found nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, you got 20 guys to find that, and they each catch one or two. You got the whole damn school just burn up, and, you know, you imagine having that stuff to yourself, like, It'd be stupid on some time, you know, some situations, but like, there's been times where like, oh my God, I'm glad I had 5 days. I found them on the last day, but still, I think if you have just, you fish for a little bit, you build a clue and you go fishing. And I think that's how it should be. It's just getting too, and I'll guarantee you 3/4 of the guys will back me up on that it's just 5 days sounds like a lot. I mean, it's too much practice. I'm just telling you right now.
It's too much practice.
I know there's times where I've talked to you, John. You're like, man, I'm not on them. But you had some clues, and you know, it could have worked. You know, it worked out. It would have worked out, and it did work out. I just feel like this stuff's it's just too much stuff. It gets you too. We were talking about it at you fall at camp there. I mean, it's just, you get so many mixed signals too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And when I was at you fall, I found that. Deep spot in Longtown, and you had to go through 2 auto zones. You know, I mean, it wasn't just a long time to get there, but it took a little bit. So I was like, all right, this is the area I want to fish in. So I spent my next day and a half breaking that down, marking stumps, sticks, brush, you know, any rough patch off the bank. And after the first day, I was kind of camping on that offshore spot, and I would watch people come in. And they would start on one side of the creek, hit every brush, hit every stump, hit every rock, and they would be 5 brush piles down the lake, and there'd be someone else come in, and there'd be someone 5 brush piles in front of him. So it was unbelievable how many people I was just sitting back and watching. They'd run in an area, they'd look down the bank like, dang, I got all this brush to myself, when there's been 15 people in front of them, and they're all scattered about 20 minutes apart from each other.
It's hard to catch.
it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable with the amount of boats we have, how good everybody is with their electronics, and how much everybody can find.
Brucey, your mic's muted for some reason.
It's a jungle gym out there, Johnny. It's a jungle gym.
Yeah, Jamie, yeah. Your
everybody mic wants to play on the same swing, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy. It really is. Yep, it really is. But
so, hey, we're getting ready to go catch some damn smallmouth.
Oh, yeah.
So, Jack, you Northern boys, I know you're the Canadian madman there, just, you know, ripping a cold one right there. I guarantee you, you're ready to go catch some smallmouth. I know I am. I didn't grow up around smallmouth, but I have it's definitely one of my favorite things to fish for. And I feel like I'm getting pretty good at the smallmouth game, and I'm just excited to go up and just actually catch some damn fish. We're just going to have to try to find them 4-pound plus fish is going to be key in that damn derby. I don't know. Hopefully we can find them in the river. I haven't spent much time in the river. It seemed like when we were there last, we went out of what's the place that we go out of pretty close to the mouth?
We went out of Clayton.
Yeah, Clayton. We'd go out there, and I just go to the lake. I mean, there's no reason to jungle around. But, it was one on the lake by Corey that day. But there were some guys catching them at the mouth of the river there. So yeah. it can be done in the river. What do you guys think it'll take a day to win?
Brad told me you need 22 a day just to play.
I think you need 22 a day to make top 10, without a doubt.
That's what I told you after we went through the stats, where you're like, you need 22 a day to get a check.
Yeah. No, I said 20. No. I said 20.
19, okay. 18.
I think it'll be 19 a day. We get a check, probably.
Yeah, I know the elite fields don't have the number of people we have, but when they take out of Waddington, you know, 17 and a half usually gets in that 40-50 range.
It drops significant between Waddington and Clayton. You lose four hours of fishing time or 3.5 hours of fishing time running into the mouth. So you got to take that off the weights too.
Yeah, I think the last year we were up there, I think the first day Iaconelli came in, because I was in the point race when we were up there, and Iaconelli came in a 17 pounds, I believe, the first day, or 16 pounds, and I think he was 140th.
Mm-hmm.
He dropped all the way down, and he made a comeback the second day and caught like 19 and made it to the elites, but he did it the last day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know. We just got a good swing for it.
Yeah, for sure.
At least camp fish should be a lot better. I don't think we'll be eating drum and catfish. At least we should be eating walleye up there.
Nah, baby smallmouth. No. Y'all got too many fish up there. I'm jealous. I'm going to start cutting them up.
Yeah, we got good fishing where I'm at. And, it's nothing to catch 100 bass a day, and there's lots of 2.5 to 3 pounders. But like Gussie told me, since the first time he went there, he's like, you won't even want to fish at home after going there.
That's probably the best
saying a lot.
Fishery in the world. I mean, day in, day out, Sturgeon Bay seasonal is really, really good for big ones, but it seems like that Thousand Islands day in, day out just kicks it. And, you know, that lake there is so much protection because it's so big and so vast. And it's hard to get out there most days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the river is huge, too. I mean, that's a big, big place, you know. There's a lot of places.
I got to tell you boys a story. I think I told Brad and Jamie this, but it would have been when we were there when Corey won. I went out there to the lake where I didn't have my Mega Live on my boat at the time. It was just kind of in the works where they were trying to get them on everybody's boats and everything was kind of backordered. Anyway, I didn't have a forward facing sonar up there when I went on the St. Lawrence River. I mean, I don't know what the hell. I mean, it is what it is. I still had my 360 and I was working the rock and stuff like that, but I didn't have a live, but I felt like I could catch them pretty good. I went out there and I know what I know now from running my live and everything like that. Like I know I was around some good ones. I just couldn't. I was casting in no man's land when I could have been boom. Okay, there's one boom. Cast right to it, and I could have caught some fish. But what's crazy is I had a really good spot in practice, but I came back there in the tournament, caught a couple rats, and I think your dad fished with me, or your grandpa fished with me, and he caught a good one there. Like, you know, not a big one, but like 3.5, 3.75. It was a nice fish. And anyway, we ended up coming back in. It just wasn't going on. I just felt like just like either moved. Well, they didn't move. They were there because I came back out there after the tournament and I wanted to fish for some more days. And I went out there and Prosnick stayed and his buddy came in and he wanted to take out. And we went out there and I literally pulled up on the spot and there was this big ass, like it was almost like a offshore fishing boat. And there was like six old guys in there and they all had their rods and the guy was baiting their rods and they were putting crawdads on a crappie jigs and they were dropping them things down there. And I'm telling you, they were ripping 4 to 6 pound smallmouth out as soon as they would get down there every time. And they all caught their limit. They were all cleaning every one of them and they were all giant smallmouth and they were keeping them out there. And it just showed me how many big ones are there. I mean, literally, as soon as they would their line would get to the bottom, boom, 4 or 6 pounders. I was literally 20 yards, and it was so funny. Them old bastards, they were like, "I can't believe you ain't catching." I said, "Dude, I don't got live bait." I said, "Trust me." I said, "They eat like they know what's going on down there. Them biggins, it's crazy."
Yeah, they probably do that.
It was pretty neat. It wasn't neat to see, but it was like, holy shit, they're loaded on that thing. I mean, definitely the winning bag on that deal. You hit it just right and got on.
Yeah, looking forward. I think everyone's got it circled on the schedule. Yeah. Should be good. Like, hopefully, not too many people drop out of the points race. It's been a lot more solid than I thought throughout. Like, it's still at 172. There's really hasn't been many drop like since the first Derby or two. So at least we'll have a bunch of EQs up there and have some good fish. And John's got some experience up there. I know. I'm sure you're not too worried about it. And
hey, this guy right here and over here, I can't do it. Yeah, right over here. Both these guys, whatever, are doing the same damn pattern. Yeah, I was backwards on here.
Yeah, Brad top tender last time.
About it, it might come into play. So anyway, whatever. It's gonna be it's gonna be fun. I hope I haven't been there this time of year. I think it's gonna there's gonna be some new techniques that not new techniques, but techniques that I really love doing. So hopefully they'll come into play. That'd be fun. Make it a fun deal.
Excited. I feel like so far this season it's been 5 of the same tournaments. We're finally going to something that's off the wall, different. I don't have to look for fry garters on a stump. I don't, I can go out and just go fishing and catch
some. You can just get after it, Brad. I mean, you can just get jiggy with it.
Yeah, it's another thing. We're preparing you for the Elite Series. Oh, we're doing one smallmouth tournament this year. They're doing 32% of their schedule.
Well, I hope we can do 3 smallmouth tournaments next year. You know, Champlain, St. Lawrence, and Oneida would be, or, St. Clair, whatever. That'd be fun. I need smallmouth in my life because those are the most fun tournaments that we go to. And, yeah, if you want to keep me around, start throwing some more smallmouth around.
You know, on the first largemouth I ever caught in the U.S. was Chansey. The first one of it,
Eufaula, Alabama.
Jeez,
really?
So, how bad do you think I want to get to some damn smallmouth? We're doing one Derby, and I might get 80th or 200th. Like, who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's so nice being around them brown fish.
They are. I can't wait to get sniffers rowing them. I love catching them, so it's one of my favorite things to do. So,
yeah, that tournament we all have circled, but kind of a scary tournament, honestly.
They all are.
Yeah, I mean, you could run literally 80 miles. You could stay close by, fish where you could see them, fishing 30 to 50 foot, and you go out and have a good fishing day, catch some 3-pounders, and you come back and you're in a hole. That's what's scary. You got to produce a couple 4 or 5 pound bites every day. Those are the tournaments that scare me. Where you have to catch some big ones every day.
Yeah. And, or you could play her safe and stick close to the ramp and, 65 boats come back from the boundary with 23 pounds and you're standing there with 18 and you're toast.
Yeah.
Well, another thing up there, like fish care, like you have a 2-pounder or 3-pounder die on you, which, this time of year, it's hot up there. Everything's hard to keep alive. I mean, fish care is going to be playing this deal for sure, too.
Yeah, don't put ice in your live wells. I don't know who needs to hear that, but don't.
Not up there, you don't need to.
You don't need to anywhere.
Sure, you have a business.
That's the biggest damn scam in the game. Flood your boat, turn it on manual, screw it.
I gotta show you guys something. So obviously I'm in Alaska. I didn't know I was even gonna be here. I want to show you my buddy's boat. It's unbelievable. The Arctic Fox, he guides fishing. So if anybody wants to damn come up here on an elite trip, I mean, it's an executive and a presidential suite up here. But I want to give you a little walkabout in this sucker. I mean, this is Captain Ron times 100 up in here. But he's got, look at this thing. But it's a big bastard. It's got like 4 bedrooms in it.
Chancey, take her for a rip. Huh? Can't he drive that thing?
He's got that thing beached. He needs to be out there fishing.
He might not let me touch the steering wheel. But look at the refrigerator. It's got a dang quarter. You go down in here. It's amazing.
That's nice.
But, yeah. I mean, anybody that wants to go on this trip, like, he's a buddy of mine, so we're going to go out and just have a good time. But if anybody does want to, like, line up, I mean, I'm just telling you, just get a hold of me. And there's no other trip up in Alaska that you can actually go and VIP fish out there and actually go where the big ones are. You're going to be getting up. You're going to be going in a boat that where they're going to go a mile out or a couple miles out. And you're going to be fishing for chickens, little baby ones. You know what I'm saying? So this is actually the real deal. But this is
that's the meat way.
I'm newly married, boys. This is my wife. Yes.
Hi. Congratulations. She
might come up to New York. Yes. I don't know if she will or not, but
I might.
Anyways,
might surprise you.
I don't know how the ocean system works, but you might be able to lock that bitch right on over to St. Lawrence.
I think we could just probably get her on cruise and be there by tournament days. No, that'd be
40,000 gallons and be there
a long way. Well, it's opposite end of the ocean.
All right, bud. Well, we'll let you get back to your trip. John, anything you want to say before we let you go and catch up with you to St. Lawrence, bud?
Nah. I'm good, man. I talk about whatever, you know. I'm good.
I gotta say this though, dude. Hey. Are you related to Ray Hanselman at all?
No, but I have got that. I have got that. Especially a couple years ago, we both wore the Skeeter team jersey, and we were both rocking the same jersey. So yeah, I got a lot of references to that.
Oh yeah, I can see it. It doesn't help that
Johnny Silent but Violent.
Silent but violent. Yeah.
You are too, Brad. You're silent but violent. Me and Jamie are just gobbling off the roost all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, boys. Hard to get a word in around here. We got a whole Brady bunch on the 4 block. Chancey, enjoy your honeymoon, man. Congratulations.
Yeah. See you boys up in St. Lawrence. I'm looking forward to it and thanks for having me on here. I love always chatting, fishing and whatever. So hopefully we can do her again sometime. Hopefully we can do a little better at this next tournament. Try to make some shit happen, but we'll see you boys up there.
Bring my extension cords. I got
them for you. Don't be fooled, bud. I had to pick up. I cleaned that place.
I'm good. I got those powerhouse run and gun chargers. I literally haven't plugged in my boat since day 2 of Oklahoma.
So. They're deader in the graveyard.
Yeah. Well, no, you'll they're good. Right. They charge on the fly. So you're styling. But I'm still going to need them cords, bub. Bring some halibut with them. Wrap them in halibut.
I'll get you guys dialed in. So we'll talk soon. Have a good rest of your guys' weekend. And 4th of July, be safe. Don't be blowing your hands off lighting fireworks.
All right, bud. Enjoy the trip.
All right.
John, congrats again, man. Really impressive. Everyone's going to have eyes on the St. Lawrence. Don't mean to add any pressure. I know you've been there a bunch. You're going to do fine. And we'll see you soon, boys. Take care.
I'm rooting for you, buddy. There ain't nobody that doesn't want you to make it. So,
yeah. All right, boys.
Appreciate that. Yep. See y'all.
Have a good one.
Thanks, guys. Bye.